Okay, the rules for this particular lesson goes like this. When it gets to be about close to 10:30, since this is a lesson, the God's plan for the godly husbands, when we get to be around 10:30 there, if you guys want me to stop, then you go like that. If you ladies want me to keep going, you go like that. Okay, so we'll see how it's working out. Okay, let's turn first of all to 1 Peter chapter 3 and verse 7. Be the passage that we're going to start off with. We want to remind you that beneath the surface of the passages of scriptures that we'll bring to your attention is 1 John chapter 5 and verse 3. You don't turn over to that necessarily. We've brought that up a number of times. But in that passage it states that, "For this is the love of God, that we keep His commandments, and His commandments are not grievous." So let's take a look at the commandments of God. All the teachings of God are His commandments for us. And as far as the guys are concerned here, as far as the husbands are concerned, we start off here in 1 Peter chapter 3 and in the 7th verse. So turn with me to that passage if you like to follow along. Otherwise, I'll just read it as clearly as I can for your understanding. It says, "You husbands, in the same way, live with your wives in an understanding way, as with someone weaker, since she is a woman, and show her honor as a fellow heir of the grace of life, so that your prayers will not be hindered." And I want to point out to you, first of all here, that I think you can read this particular passage in the wrong sense. To take it to the idea that the husband is to dwell with his wife like she's some poor, unqualified person, but we'll be understanding and patient with them. And that's as far from this as it possibly can be. The idea here, I think, is plain once you put this in your mind. That you husbands, then, you live in an understanding way. That is, you understand what your position is here. You understand who you are and what you are. This is the understanding is, and it's a very serious obligation that is placed upon a man. And it says here then, in an understanding way, and I think that the way we can look at this best is over in Ephesians chapter 4 and verse 23. I'm going to take my glasses off. My bifocals aren't working for me today. Got those glasses recently, and I'm not used to the bifocals. You look up and look down and things go away and then they come back, and so I'm searching around for them, so excuse me for that. Let's turn over to Ephesians chapter 5 and in the 23rd verse of this passage, and we'll find here that under the direction of God, that we find the position that the husband is to occupy in the family. And it's stated pretty clearly here, as in other places, but in Ephesians 5 and verse 23, it says that the husband is the head of the wife, as Christ also is the head of the church, he himself being the Savior of the body. All right, let's consider this now, to be an understanding way. Husbands, understand that this is the way that God has designed or has planned the family to be able to function. And that is that the husband is the head of the wife. The husband is the head of the family. And notice what it does not say. It does not say that the husband is to conquer and take over the position of the head. No, he is the head. It does not say that the husband has to dominate his wife in order to maintain his headship. No, he is the head. There is no one to fear in this. It cannot be taken away, cannot be diminished. The husband is the head of the family because that's what God says. So that has to settle that question right there. The husband has nothing to be proud of. The husband in this matter. It is not by the husband's power that he is the head of the family. It is not by any personal superiority that he's the head of the family. And I think every wife in the world knows that. He's not the head because he's superior. He's not the head because he is more powerful. But basically, he's the head of the family because that's what God says. Okay? And that's what he says. So there's no position to have to be gained. And husbands, understand this. When you are placed as the head of the family, that means that you are going to answer to God for that headship. You cannot pass it off. You cannot neglect it. You cannot renege upon that in any way. You will stand in the judgment day, and you will be judged according to that headship that God has placed you in as far as your family is concerned. You will answer to God. You don't answer to God for your wife's objection. Okay? We talked about that last night. You do not answer for that. She will answer for that. But you will answer for your headship regardless of whether your wife is in subjection or not. That's a matter between her and God. The headship is a matter between the husband and God. So any attempt by the husband to subjugate his wife in some way is to usurp the authority of God. Anytime a man tries to, quote, put his wife in submission, he has usurped the authority of God, because only God will do that. And in usurping the authority of God, there's a word for that. It's called blasphemy. That is a terrible sin. And so the man has to understand he is the head of the family, and he does not answer to God for the wife's subjection. Now, wives, neither does the husband answer to the wife for his subjection. As we said, with regard to subjection, that's a matter between the wife and God. That's none of the husband's business. As far as being a head of the family, the husband will answer to God and to God alone, and it's none of the wife's business. Okay, stay out of that. That's between the man and God. God will take care of that, and the relationship that the man has with his God is going to say what kind of headship that he has. So as far as being then the head of the family, we're going to have to find out what it is that God expects of us. We're going to have to say, okay, what's going on here that God is placed me as a head over my family? Sometimes that's an intimidating thing. I don't know if you found this. Amongst women, there are some women that want to take a lead. Okay? Amongst men, there are some men that want to take a lead. There's no difference. As a matter of fact, there might be a little difference, and that is the guys might be less inclined to want to take the lead than the women are. How many husbands have I run into? Sometimes it's been my own self that has been willing to let the authority and the leadership of the family, more than willing and glad, to pass that off onto our wives. Because then we have more important things to do. We can get out and go fishing or something, right? Or we can go off and, you know, whatever that we're doing, because the wives will take over the headship. No. Men, you are sinning when you do that. But even if you do that, do you realize this? Let's just suppose that you say, well, I think I'll just let my wife take care of everything, and I'm just going to, you know, go out and do my thing, and she'll just have to do that. You know what? You're going to answer to God for everything that happens in that family, whether or not you are involved. Whatever goes on in that family, whatever decisions that are made, whatever happens in that family, the husband's going to stand before the judgment seat of God, and he's going to answer for that. I think it's a good idea then, guys, if maybe we get involved and we see what's going on, and maybe we have some input into this thing, that we, because whether or not we get involved, we answer for it. God made us the head in our family. And so in 2 Timothy chapter 2 and in the 15th verse, this would have a particular application in this thing, as it does in all other places that you will find it. 2 Timothy, in of life that you're living, it says, be diligent to present yourself approved to God as a workman who does not need to be ashamed, accurately handling the word of truth. Does this apply to husbands? Of course, it applies to wives. It applies to every Christian. But now we're talking about this, guys. We're talking about being the head of our family. And we're to do this in an understanding way. That is, to do it according to knowledge. And if we're going to do it according to knowledge, then perhaps we should put in some time and try to find out what it is God expects of us. It would be a good idea to know that. Study to show yourself approved unto God. And then it says, a workman that needs not to be ashamed. What kind of a workman doesn't need to be ashamed? Okay? Any job you've ever had. The workman that does not need to be ashamed is the workman that's doing his job. How complicated is that? So study to show yourself approved unto God. Give diligence to do that. And then to show yourself approved unto God, a workman that needs not to be ashamed, and doing what? Rightly dividing the word of truth. Okay, that's where it is. And that's what we have to have. If we're going to enter into a marriage relationship, then we need to get diligent and we need to start working on this. We need to seek after God's approval. And since a person is made a headship, given the headship, then there rests upon that person to make a decision. You've got to make decisions. That sounds so simple, doesn't it? How many of you wives have waited around for your husband to make a decision? You know, why don't you decide what to do? You know, get going here. Let's do something. And so the idea is we've got to make the decisions that God would want us to make. And that, of course, that doesn't just happen at the snap of the fingers. Okay, that's going to take time and whatnot. But let's think about the kind of decisions that the husband's supposed to make now. He's supposed to be the head of the family. What kind of decisions? Well, I guess the decisions I'm going to make is what kind of food it is I like best, and I want my wife to cook it up really good for me, just right.
Amen.
And believe it or not, I've even run across this. The decision, this isn't me, but I mean, I had you might call it counsel of a guy or rebuke a man one time because he was upset with his wife because she wouldn't iron his underwear. He's the head of the house, you know, he thought. And if I want my underwear ironed, then she ought to do that. What kind of decisions is a man supposed? God made you the head of the family for your convenience? Did he do this just so you have a bunch of servants that are jumping around to make you happy? To make you have nothing to do and no obligation? Is that what God's gave you the headship for? And I say, no. God made you the head of your family to make those decisions that are to the best interest of your family. Not to the best interest of you, to the best interest of your family. For that matter, you can see in that immediately that where does a man stand in the family as far as what's going on in the family? He stands at the bottom of the list. He makes decisions for his own welfare last. He makes the decisions for his family, for his wife and his children first. That comes first. Whatever is left over, you know, he gets to take part of something of that. Don't think this is a matter of convenience and of well-being and ease for the husband, because it is not. It is a responsibility that God has imposed upon an individual. And so then, God didn't make you the head of the family just so your desires can be gratified. God has made you the head of the family, and as the head of the family, you've got to make decisions. You know, this is, I think, perhaps the thing that frustrates my wife more than anything, and she doesn't show it. She doesn't complain about it. But I am slow to make a decision. I mean, I'm the kind of person that when I'm thinking, well, we'll go this way, then when I'm thinking that way, then the other way seems the better way. And so then I say, wait a minute. You know, and so I argue with myself a lot, and it takes me a long time before I really, you know, a lot of times, to come around to figure out what I want to do. I'm just by nature. That's the kind of, not my wife. My wife can make decisions at the snap of a finger. She knows instantly, you know, what she wants to do and, you know, what her evaluation is. And so there gets to be a little bit of a frustration because she wants to fly off and get going. And I'm saying, wait a minute, I've got to figure this stuff out and figure which way I'm going to go. And so, but you've got to make a decision. And for that matter here, as far as the family is concerned, listen, guys, poor decisions are better than no decisions. Because at least if you make a bad decision, at least you're going to be smarter later on, right? Most of our learning, and I think you guys would agree, most of our wisdom comes when we really goof it up. When we really do something that is, really do something, so I wish I hadn't done that. I don't know how many times in my life I've said that. But by the end of that, you get a little bit smarter. Now, wives, listen to me. You don't have to remind your husband, say, boy, that was really a dumb thing to do, and I told you ahead of time if it's going to do it the way it's going to. Don't do that. Please don't do that. Give us the kind of credit to know that if we made a dumb decision and it really works out badly, believe me, we know. We don't like doing that. We don't like things turning out badly, and the next time we're going to try to make it turn out a little bit better. It takes time. I talked last night about it takes time for a woman to learn how to give herself in subjection to her family. It's not easy to do. And we need to understand that it's not an easy, instant thing to do for every man to start making decisions. Not easy. I'm presuming that you guys have business meetings here, men's business meetings. Okay. And you smile if I say something that's true here. The ladies don't sit on that since you don't know it. Men are clumsy at making decisions. You come to a business meeting and you'll see that. Very few times are they efficient. Very few times do they stay on subject. Very few times do they figure out the best thing to do right off the snap of the fingers. And usually, you know, we have wives that are waiting. If you have your business meeting right after a service, you know, then the wives are up there waiting to say, what are those guys doing? How can it take you so long? We come up and say, well, we decided that we're going to have two garbage cans now instead of just the one, and we've been in there for an hour and a half, you know, trying to figure out. And we were saying, what are you doing in there? Okay, why don't you just make a decision? It's not easy. It is not easy. You have to work at it, and you have to be. And look at it like this. I'm not a great card player, but if I can remember my vocabulary, is there a, what do you call the person that when everybody's playing the cards and then the person walks behind and they look at the cards and then they can maybe tell somebody how to play it? Is that a kibitzer or something like that? Doesn't matter. But you know what? If you're holding the cards in your hand and you're trying to figure out what card to play, that's a lot harder than if you're the guy looking over the shoulder. Who's saying, play that one, play that one. Okay, that's a lot easier to look over the shoulder because the guy that's got to play the card has got to suffer the consequences. He's got the responsibility. He has the obligation there to do the right thing. Whereas the person in the back saying, hey, play that one. Then he plays and then he laughs. Oh, you sure played a bad one that time. Wives, don't do that to your husbands. Your husband has a big responsibility, and if he's a responsible Christian man, then he takes it seriously, and he's trying to figure out the thing to do. You're sitting there. You're not the one that's going to stand on judgment day because of the decision that's made here. It doesn't mean heaven and hell to you, and you're looking behind and saying, look, why don't you just make up your mind? Why don't you just do something and get going? He said, well, I've got to figure this out. I've got to get this going in the right way. So make a decision. And wives, what appears simple to you may not be simple to the one who is responsible in carrying this out. Now, husbands, listen to me here carefully. You're the head of your family. Don't be a tyrant. You know that happens sometimes. When you give power or authority to a person who's not used to exercising power or authority, they go berserk. How have you ever known a person that they're just as mild and even-tempered as they can possibly be until you put them behind the wheel of a powerful car and they're driving down the freeway at 80 miles an hour and somebody cuts in between them and the car ahead and they call that road rage? That usually the people that get involved in road rage, they're not that kind of a person when they're home or on the job or anything, but you put them in that powerful car and they got all that power, they're not used to exercising that power. And then they fly off the handle and do this kind of thing. Husbands, you've been given authority. You've been given a leadership in your family. Don't be a tyrant. A tyrant is somebody who rules cruelly and oppressively and selfishly. Don't be that kind of a ruler. God never intended for that to happen. It is not practical. And here's something to understand now, and you will learn this. Most of you guys have some experience here, and I know that you'll relate to this. It's not practical. In fact, it's not even possible to make every decision for the family. You can't do it. There's too many decisions to make. I mean, you say, and I think it's because a person might be insecure to say, okay, I've been given this headship now, and if my wife makes any decision, then she's taking away authority from me. And that means I'm less of a man. And this kind of thing. And so, no, look, guys, if he's sweeping the floor, she can decide whether to sweep it under a rug or to sweep it up into a dustpan or what she's going to do. And now that's pretty nitty-picky, and I don't know if anybody ever did that. Just to say here, you can't make every decision in the working of a household. And it's a foolish person. It's a foolish leader that does not depend upon people around about them to help them make decisions. I know when we first got married, I tried to make every decision, but I'll tell you what, I've been married a long time now. And it probably annoys my wife when I suppose every day and everything we're going along, I say, well, what do you think? What do you think we should do? Because I have found over the years that more often than not, what she thinks we ought to do is basically what we ought to do. And I'd rather hear that ahead of time. So that if I have the leadership in there, I say, okay, hey, that's a good idea. Let's do it that way, because I find out later on I'm not saying, oh, I wish I hadn't done that. Take advantage of people around you who have some wisdom and some experience and give some authority. I mean, let loose of some authority. I don't know anybody here how you conduct your affairs. But I'm going to say this, and I hope I don't start any family problems. But for example, sometimes a husband says, I'm the leader of this family, and so I will see where every penny of money is spent. And I've known guys that they refuse to let their wives go grocery shopping because they feel they're giving up some authority. Well, what kind of a whatever you are, I wanted to say fool, but we shouldn't call anybody a fool, so we'll take that back. Look, your wife has talent. She has ability. You need to learn to lean upon that ability. That's what a good leader does. A good leader gathers around them people they trust and people that they can, depend on what they're going to do and how things are going to turn out. And we've got to learn how to direct our families in that same way. All right, so there's the idea of putting down the idea of recognition of what the authority that comes along with the headship is. Now, that's a great responsibility. And it is not uncommon. Maybe it's too often. Well, once it's too often. And that is for husbands to say, I just don't want that responsibility. How many times do you suppose that's happened? Where a man and a woman have gotten married and the husband finds out, hey, wait a minute, this is more than I ever wanted to commit to, and I'm out of here. They're gone because they can't do it. They don't want to deal with it. They don't want the family problems, and they don't want the decisions to be made. And so because of their insecurity or their thinking, well, I can't do this, I can't get this done right, so I will run away from it. I will just get away and escape. You know, none of us are perfect. Not a single one. And we're not made to be the heads of our house because we are perfect. We all are imperfect. Now let's understand that our lack of perfection, is something that we all share. And you know what redeems our imperfection in our functioning, whether it's a wife, a husband, or a parent, or whatever? What redeems us is we gave it our best effort. None of us are perfect. All we can do is the best we can do. Let's give it our best shot. Let's go for it the best that we can. And we know, yes, I'm insecure. I'm not good at making decisions. I might do the wrong thing. I might make people mad at me. I might do this or that or the others. Look, give it your best shot. And you know what? That's all that God requires of us, isn't it? Remember in Matthew chapter 25, and again, time will not permit. We can't do all these. I've got so many passages, we'll not do it. Do you remember the parable of the talents? You remember how that the guy was going to go off, and so he calls his servants together, and he gave to one so many talents, and so one another different number, and finally the guy had the one talent. Do you remember how actually he gave with the same purpose, he gave to each one of them in the same way? He gave to each one according to their ability. Five talents are given to the five talent guy. One talent's given to the one talent guy. God only expects of us the best we can do. That's all we can do. So that's what we should do. Now, here then, let's gather around us. We'll gather around us. That's our family. That's the ones that are around us. Then let's listen to our family members. If I'm going to be the head of my family, I need to understand my family. I need to understand and have the knowledge. I need to listen to the people of my family before I make a decision. And that's going to help others. If my family knows that, then they're going to trust in my motives to do the best thing for the family, especially when you have young people involved. So that as you learn that others in your family have good judgment, they have good sense, and that they can see things in a different way than you. You know, we talked about when God looked at Adam, he created him, he says, it's not good for man to be alone. That means he was imperfect. That means that he had some things that were lacking in him. And so because it wasn't good for Adam to be alone, God created Eve. So Eve is what Adam is not. Now look, guys, you're trying to make a decision as an imperfect being. You can make a better decision if you listen to your wife. Why? Because she sees things differently than you do. She feels things differently than you do. She perceives things differently than you do. And you need to listen to that, because that will add to what you have already. And it's the only way that you're going to arrive or to approach unto perfection whatsoever. All right, so that's it. That starts out. The wife is to be in subjection to her husband. She doesn't like that. She's then been looking around to be in subjection to somebody, but she submits to God's will. The husband is to be the head of his wife. He didn't want that. He didn't want that responsibility, but he's willing to accept that and go on with it. And this is the way that a family is going to work. Each person is doing what God wants them to do, and to do it the best that they can. The husband doesn't answer to the wife. The wife doesn't answer to the husband. We all answer to God. I'll not answer to whether or not my wife is in subjection. I don't answer to God for that. That's between her and God. I can't do anything about that. I can only answer to God for exercising the headship in my family. Let's go over to 1 Peter chapter 3 and in verse 7. We had occasion to cite this, but I want to point this out again because I think it's an important thing to avoid this idea, number one, that the husband say, I'm some kind of a superior guy because I'm the head of the family, and sometimes the wife thinks, well, they're demeaning women because they've got to be in subjection and this kind of thing. Well, let's look at 1 Peter chapter 3 and verse 7 once again. In this passage says, you husbands, in the same way, live with your wives in an understanding way, as with someone weaker, or as the weaker vessel. I hope you remember the analogy that I used. I used it last night. The man is a stronger vessel. The woman is the weaker vessel. Has nothing to do with superiority or anything like that. The guy God made, the guy, he can be kicked around and beat up and put into hard places and be smothered down with, you know, violence and all this kind of thing. It's God made the guys. They can endure that kind of stuff. You know, they can take a good beating and still stand up, you know, and maintain for the truth and everything else. But the woman, as the weaker vessel, maybe the more delicate vessel, is the vessel that portrays the excellence of the contents of the vessel. The man protects the contents of the vessel. The woman portrays the contents of the vessel. And so the guy needs to understand that. She's different. She's not inferior. She's not inferior. Her emotions, her outlooks, her reactions, her moods, they're all different. She thinks differently. She values things differently. She comes to decisions in a different way. And so don't let any man come and tell you, as we said before, how to understand women. Because the answer is, you can't, and you won't. You don't have the wherewithal to understand them because they're not like you, and they don't do things like you do. Women, it's the same thing in reverse there. I used the example one time we were going to meet a person that we knew down in it was down in California somewhere, I can't remember, Sacramento, and we were in Bend. And so we wanted to meet, called him, hadn't seen him for a long time. This is great. We're going to travel down to California. We'll stop and visit this person, this friend of ours. And so we talked to him on the phone. He says, okay, we'll meet you at such and such a restaurant at, I don't know, 8 o'clock in the morning, say, or I don't know what time it was. So there we had. I've never been there. And I'm in Bend. And so I get out my map. We didn't have GPS in. I get out my map, and I calculated what the distance was. I calculated the miles per gallon that my car gets. I calculated how often I'd have to stop and gas up. I calculated what the speed limit would be and how long it would take to get us from place to place. And I went all through this thing, and I figured out, I forget what it was, but say, I figured out it's going to take us 8 hours and 13 minutes. Okay. And so I get my stuff, and I walk out, and Kiss says, do you know how long it's going to take us to get down there and meet Jim down there? She said, I think it'd take us about 8 hours and maybe 15 minutes or so. Okay. He says, how does she do that? How does she do that? It just felt like it to her to take about 8 hours and 15 minutes to get there, where on my calculator, I calculated 8 hours and 13 minutes, and I think she was right and I was wrong. I just puzzled my head. I said, I hate it when you do that. You know, you're doing something bad to me because that makes me feel inferior. This is just, women are different than men. And you can't do anything about it, and you're never going to figure it out. I was on a trip one time, and I stopped in, I guess we lived in Bend. I stopped in Payette. I was traveling through Payette. We didn't live there. And they had a fruit stand up there. And boy, in Payette, they can grow really good watermelons. And my wife really loves watermelons. And I stopped at the stand, and I bought a watermelon and put it in the trunk. And I said, boy, I'm really going to surprise her. So I drove home, and I pull in the driveway and walk in the house and say, guess what I got? She says, a watermelon? How did she do that? How does she know that? You know, I don't know. We talked about a birthday party we had up in Colorado a week ago. And I jokingly called it, it was her surprise birthday party. Well, everybody knows they can't surprise her. So they just scheduled it, invited people to come, and they all knew, and she knew, and we went there for a birthday party. Well, a few months before, they had a birthday party for me. And Janice had a surprise birthday party for me. And she had all the kids from all over the country come to the house for my surprise birthday party, and it surprised me. I had no idea till they came knocked on the door of the house. But what did she do? Well, she said, we need a new mattress. I want a new mattress. It's fine, get a mattress. So she got a new mattress. And she said, what do we do with the old mattress now? I'm moving it around. She said, just put it in the living room floor and we'll leave it there for now. Okay. And then one day she came home and she had a package that she did store bought, and I don't know what she bought all, but she had several pillows. She brought in, I don't know, 5 or 6 pillows. Okay. She come in the house and went, so what'd you get? Well, about 5 or 6 pillows. Fine, she's good. She wants some pillows. She can have all the pillows she wants, you know. And then she got a little twin mattress out of it and put it in the family room, put it on the floor in there. You think I had a clue something was going on? I did not have a clue. See, well, that's a guy thing. See, we don't notice things, you know, we don't figure those things out, but with her, there's no way we could have surprised that. She would have recognized a raised eyebrow or a smirk or whatever, so no surprises there. She's different, and I don't understand it, and it puzzles her sometimes. How come I don't understand anything, can't figure anything out? They are different. Dwell with your wives in an understanding way, because they are a weaker vessel. And I would like you to think of a point of view, because they are a different vessel. And you value them for what they have that you don't have. That's a value. And when you put those two together, then you have a family that's functional and is going to work. All right? So she is the weaker vessel. And I've got all kinds of notes here that I've seen we're not going to be able to do. Let's talk about this thing of respecting and acknowledging your wife's authority. Because God made you the headship doesn't mean that your wife doesn't have any authority in the home. And I hate it to see it, guys, any man, and I've run across a few that think that their wife should have no authority whatsoever in the home. And I think that's as far from God's plan as it can possibly be. For this matter, let's say she exercises your authority in the home. And you should respect that and you should back it up. When mom says something to the kids, that's your authority. And if the kids rebel against what mom has said, they have rebelled against your authority. And don't make any mistake about that. And if you get some guy come in to paint the living room, and he thinks it would be a better color and different color than what your wife thinks it's going to be, what color do you suppose that guy ought to paint your living room? It better be the color your wife says, I want that color, and he's going to say, well, hey, you don't have any authority here. I'll paint it what I... You're going to get mad, aren't you? You're going to say, wait a minute. Why did you paint it the wrong color when you knew my wife wanted this color? Well, because she exercised your authority. And she has it, and there's no lacking in that whatsoever. And so there is the case there. She's due the same respect that you would have for yourself. Made a little statement down here. Allow no man, even if it's a friend, allow no family member, allow nobody to criticize or to demean your wife in her own home. Again, I'm linking a case there of a fellow that had to have some marital counseling. That his family would come into their home and then they would order her around and tell her what a poor wife and a poor mother she was, in her own home, and that guy stand around there and do nothing about it. God forbid. If they're talking to your wife like that and disrespecting your wife like that, they are disrespecting you. Don't put up with that. She is your flesh. The Bible says, and the two become one. They are one in that family. And you treat your wife as if she is one and let her know that she is better off being your wife than she was before, rather than looking at the opposite. Oh, that poor woman married to that guy. Look at the way he treats her. I tell you, that's an abomination before God. And the man is disrespecting his own self when he disrespects his wife. And so he will then sanctify her. Great passage there in Ephesians chapter 5 and verse 26. And our time's about up, so we won't do the thumbs up, thumbs down thing. But in Ephesians chapter 5, this will be the last point I'll bring up here for now. But over in the book of Ephesians chapter 5 and verse 26, it compares the marriage relationship to the relationship that Christ has to the church. And I'll tell you what, either way you look at that, it gives you great insight to the church and how the church relates to Christ. But in the opposite set, it gives you great insight to the family and how the husband relates to his wife. Listen to Ephesians chapter 5 now, and actually the great passage from verse 25 through 29, and we can do some good word studies in that. You can do that on your own. But in chapter 5, verse 25, husbands, love your wives. The husband says, I just don't love my wife anymore. What did he do? He's sinning. That's a commandment of God. There's no choice in that matter. He's going to go to hell if he does not repent of it and change it. All right, husbands, love your wives. Just as Christ also loved the church and gave himself up for her. Now listen, let's go down. You read through this, guys. And how Christ treats the church is how you should treat your wife. So Jesus loves the church, and it says in the 26th verse, so that he might sanctify her. Jesus sanctifies the church. To sanctify something is to set it apart. To set it apart, apart from all others. And to set it apart as something special to him. And that's the way the husband is to sanctify his own wife. He is to set her apart from all other women. She is, and this should never be a doubt. It should never be ever a question. It should never even be a thought that would come into the wife's mind, except that she is the only woman for you. There is none other, and she should never have any doubt about how you feel about that. Sanctify your wife, just as Christ sanctified the church. On down through that. And again, there's a word study in there for each one of these words. You find here that he is to sanctify as Jesus sanctified the church. And he is to, in verse 27, that he might present to himself the church in all her glory. Okay, I'm going to close on this point here. Listen. The wife is vulnerable when she enters a marriage because she will submit herself to her husband. And that's vulnerability, isn't it? They are really vulnerable when they do that. Now, guys, you want to know what? You're vulnerable. You are to glorify your wife. That means you are to get her everything she wants to feel good about herself. You glorify her. You give her. That means if she wants shoes in her closet, then your life's effort is to put shoes in her closet. If she wants pictures on the wall, Put pictures on the wall. I don't care what you have to do it. You will glorify her. You will get her what she needs to feel good about herself and about her home. Now, do you feel vulnerable? You better, because you are. You see two things there. So, maybe it would be a good idea to see what kind of a guy it is you're thinking about getting married before you marry him. Maybe it would be a good idea to see what kind of appetites and desires and that this woman has. Can you afford to marry her? Certainly what's going to happen. I mean, I have to say this. When I got married, I had no idea. I wasn't even a Christian when I proposed to my wife. And she accepted it. I don't know why. I'm vulnerable, but I can't get her to buy anything for herself. See, because she's frugal. I don't want a closet full of shoes. She doesn't even want me to spend money on a car. See, I can't get her to go down and buy clothes. I mean, this woman is frugal. And so, and how did I get a woman like that? Well, I stumbled and fell into a hole, got up covered with gold. I mean, I had no idea. But now that I know what I do know, it's a good idea. You figure these things out ahead of time. And that saves a lot of trouble, saves a lot of heartache, if we know what kind of a person we're going to subject ourselves to. And if we know whether or not we can afford to enter into this. You know, we sit and figure, say, well, we need to have children. How many children can I afford to take care of all this? We should figure it like that. Can I afford a wife like this? Because if I can't, and we go ahead and get married, it's going to be a life of misery for me. I will not be able to provide the things that she needs and the things that she wants. But that's my job, to glorify her. Okay? And that doesn't mean I'm going to glorify her and get her the things I think she should have. That means I'm going to provide for her the things she wants. That's vulnerable. But because we're vulnerable to one another, her disposition toward me protects me. My disposition toward her protects her. And that's the way a marriage has got to work. All right, time is up. And there's a bunch of other notes that I have here. And if any of you guys want to get a copy of that, well, Chris could probably make you a copy of the notes. It's just a little word study in there and something you might follow through. But I think the main thing is, let's get a right attitude as to what we're doing. The attitude that the wife has of being in subjection. She's doing this to serve and honor God. And the best thing she can do to make her marriage work, I keep going on because I got all this stuff that I thought of. Don't enter into a punitive relationship. Do you know what I mean by that? That is, the husband, you know, really gets ill-tempered or something, and he insults his wife. And so the wife thinks, listen, if that's the kind of husband you're going to be, you're going to get the wife you deserve. And so she reacts to that in a punitive way. And then what's the husband do? Ho ho. If that's the kind of wife you're going to be, then this is the kind of husband you're going to get. And so we give each other, the husband and the wife, that they deserve to have. That plummets into the abyss, doesn't it? Because it just gets worse. You don't give your husband and your wife the husband and the wife they deserve to have. You give them the husband or the wife that God wants you to be, regardless of who they are and how they are behaving and what they are doing. And that's the only way that a marital relationship is going to work. Okay, let's take a break here, and we're over, so let's take a break, and then in a few minutes we'll get together and start on our next lesson.